Chapter 5 The Hunt. Lucy followed close on the soldiers' heels as they tiptoed through the abandoned library. With the daylight waning outside and no power in the algae-riddled building, they were dependent on headlamps and gun-mounted flashlights to banish the shadows that followed them through the cavernous wooden hall. It reminded her of the dead zone buildings they'd seen on their way into the city. This library had yet to be burned or fumigated, or whatever other desperate method the government wanted to try. Their footsteps were muffled on the aging carpet. Lucy had taken the role of spotter to pinpoint a viable D4 creature to capture. Two other soldiers, deemed to be the best shooters in the group, had been equipped with modified tranquilizer guns. The darts contained a serum of white powder mixed with liquid sedative, which Lucy and Karis had devised for the mission. Lucy's hope was that by infecting the creatures with powder rather than blood, the cancer would spread more quickly and thus generate fresh powder faster than the turtle Dillo had. Lucy scoured the aisles for signs of life. The dark alleyways stacked with books from floor to ceiling were overrun with cobwebs. Wood shavings and fallen volumes covered a patch of floor in the next aisle where a bookcase had collapsed. In the corner stood a large, earthy structure like a termite mound. Hundreds of woodlice scurried out of it, scavenging amidst the paper and wood. Lucy stumbled into the soldier before her, shunting him with her riot shield. They'd each been issued with one in case they encountered any of the explosive reptiles. Word on the street was, there were all kinds of creatures in the dead zone. Lucy apologized, having not seen the soldier's hand signal. His flashlight was trained on a cavity in the baseboards. It was around the size of a mouse hole. Lucy brought her light onto it too and knelt down. A small pair of eyes glinted back at her from the darkness, shrinking back further into the hole.
No use. We need something bigger, whispered Lucy.
They continued forwards. Sprouting up behind the librarian's desk was a rust-colored tree, similar to those she'd seen in the factories and power stations. Bark hung off its exposed red sapwood like peeling wallpaper. A clatter echoed through the hall, followed by the sound of a dart being fired. The marksman cursed his aim.
Freeze! Hands where we can see 'em,
cried the lead soldier ahead. Lucy trained her light on the entrance to the adjoining chamber. Three men stood huddled around a trolley, wearing soldiers' uniforms.
Don't shoot! We're unarmed, yo!
Called the soldier in the middle, as all three raised their hands and looked away.
Easy with the lights, man,
called another beside him.
Take your goggles off,
ordered the soldier ahead of Lucy.
Bad idea. You guys should switch your lights off,
insisted the middle soldier, keeping his hand raised.
On your knees, all of you. You're in a restricted zone.
Holy shit, I think we've got some deserters on our hands,
said the soldier by Lucy, pressing forwards. Lucy, Ruth, Karis, and the other respective military counterparts closed in on the men, who knelt with their hands in the air.
Explain this,
said Lucy's soldier, tapping the captive's trolley with his boot.
We gon' burn 'em. We need fuel, like, replied one of the soldiers.
His voice was familiar.
Take off the goggles already, snapped Lucy's soldier.
The captives peeled their night vision goggles off, letting them hang loosely around their necks. Lucy's mouth dropped as she stared at the three soldiers, Hofstein, Beckley, and Leckford, the very men who'd accused Lopez of being Patient Zero and precipitated his incarceration, the same soldiers she knew to be infected themselves and who she'd sent to the sanctuary days ago. The men looked thinner, but their lesions had gone. They weren't visibly infected anymore. She'd helped them escape the Department of Health, which meant they owed her their freedom, if not their lives. But that didn't mean they would honor their debt. If things went south, they might rat her out to save their own skins. Lucy glanced at the marksmen around her. If they learned that she'd betrayed the department before, they could turn on her in an instant. That department had brought them the yellow-striped jackets. They were loyal to it. If they arrested her, it would be the end of the mission, and the start of a long inquiry that would lead the department to discover every infected Lucy had ever helped. She hung back in the shadows, not daring to reveal herself to Lopez's men.
You're deserters, and you're looting, and you're trespassing in the dead zone. We're taking you in,
fumed Lucy's soldier.
You're lucky you idiots didn't get shot. Those darts are infected, said Karis, a soldier.
A scuttling sound pricked Lucy's attention. She trained her light on the source. A possum-like creature was making its way along the skirting boards, probing the dark cavities for food. The possum's purple and white hairs stood on end as the light struck it. The creature hissed, baring its teeth, then darted into the shadows, revealing a long, thick tail like a skunk's tipped with two barbs.
Over here! Cried Lucy, grabbing her marksman and chasing after the creature.
God damn it, watch these three!
Ordered the second marksman, leaving Ruth to guard the prisoners as he and Karis hurried after the possum.
There!
Cried Lucy, catching the creatures in her sights. The possum darted upwards onto a shelf and raced along it. Lucy's soldier fired twice, narrowly missing it. The possum dived into a row of books, bursting through the other side and disappeared into the lane beyond. Lucy leapt over a fallen branch from the rust tree as she ran. Karis was closing in from the other side, moving to flank the creature. A dart from the second marksman ricocheted off a light fitting, showering the wall with the powder serum. The possum hissed as it sprang away from the exploding mist, running frenetically towards the termite mound.
Before it hits the nest, quickly, urged Lucy,
struggling to keep the creature lit. She sprinted to keep pace with it, dodging tables, chairs, and bookshelves as she ran. Her soldier fired a dart which struck the possum's tail, throwing it off balance. The creature went into spasms, careening off course and colliding with the bookshelf beside the mound.
The net, now! Cried Lucy.
Karis fired the net gun precisely, ensnaring the infected creature. It hissed and twitched, trying to reach the dart with its mouth. As the sedative took effect, its motions became clumsy. Within a few seconds, it had slumped to the ground, drooling.
Yes,
cried Karis, high-fiving Lucy. Her celebration was short-lived. A distinct beating of wings echoed across the arched ceiling.
What was that?
Said Lucy's soldier, scanning the library. The glass on his flashlight shattered as a long, dark needle struck it, head-on. Oily black liquid seeped into the ruptured bulb.
You've woken it, you assholes! Cried Leckford.
The group frantically scanned the ceiling. Another needle sped through the air, shattering Karis's light.
Kill your lights and don't move,
urged Beckley. Lucy obeyed and crouched low, cowering against a bookcase. She held her riot shield over her head and peered up through it. Across the room, Ruth's light flicked off. Only that of Karis's marksman remained. He defiantly searched the upper balcony, chasing echoing wingbeats and illuminating glimpses of scruffy dark feathers. The soldier nearest Lucy fired his pistol, missing the nimble creature as it darted between crevices and shadows. Karis's marksman cried out as the light shattered before him, snuffing the final light in the grand chamber. A sinister clicking filled the air, followed by a swish as the bird swooped across the chamber. Two shots fired out from the far end of the room, emitting ultra-quick bursts of light. Lucy glimpsed Ruth wearing the prisoner's night-vision goggles, with her pistol extended. The bird fell to the floor with a thud and rasped, twitching from the carpet.
Liar!
Came a cry from beside Ruth. A flashlight flicked on, blinding the older woman. Leckford seized her pistol, while Beckley wrestled the goggles from her eyes.
You said y'all had special darts, yelled Leckford. I said they do. Now get the hell off me, boy, protested Ruth. Drop it, cried Lucy, leaping up and training her rifle light on the group.
Leckford seized Ruth as a human shield. He pressed the pistol to her neck.
She shouldn't have done that. Shooting that thing with regular ammo, you're only making it worse, said Leckford.
Let her go and you can tell me all about it.
Screw that. We gon' leave now, and you ain't following us. Once we all clear, we'll let Grandma go, said Hofstein. No can do, fellas, replied Karis's marksman. Just turn yourselves in. You'll get a court-martial, but it'll be quick, and you'll be back on duty in no time. The generals need boots on the ground. No point you three dying over this.
Back on duty? I ain't never going back. I love my country. I served my country, and y'all betrayed us. Never again,
spat Leckford.
What are you talking about? Nobody's betrayed you, dipshit. You're a deserter.
There's more to it than that. They're infected. Isn't that right, Beckley? Said Lucy. The use of Beckley's name stirred concerned mutters among the rebel trio and similar mutterings on Lucy's side, which she ignored. As the groups hastily conferred among themselves, the marksman beside Karis quietly shifted into position, out of sight, hiding in the shadows behind Lucy. Out of the corner of her eye, Lucy watched him raise his rifle and take aim. A needle shot through the darkness, shattering the flashlight Hofstein was pointing at Ruth.
"Nobody move!" cried Leckford.
Lucy trained her light on the dead bird, but it was nowhere to be seen. All that remained were a few shaggy black feathers and a sheen of spilled gen water. A fresh set of wing beats echoed across the room. A second pair joined them. The glass on Lucy's flashlight shattered.
"Stay still! They can't hear us speak, but they sense movement. Go real slow and do exactly what I say," said Leckford.
With a flutter, one of the birds ascended to the balcony, then cast off with a swoosh. It soared over the chamber, clicking as it scanned for movement. Lucy's blood froze as the second bird descended onto the bookcase beside her. The creature's talons scratched against the wood as it clambered across the varnished surface, casting its clicks into the darkness in a sweeping motion.
"Why are we helping these fools? You know what they do to people like us," protested Beckley. "We owe her," hissed Hofstein.
The possum beside Lucy shifted in its netting, waking drowsily. The soldier beside her sensed the movement and drew his tranquilizer gun as steadily as he could. He fired a dart into the creature, causing the possum to spasm once again. Without thinking, Lucy threw her arm out, casting her shield over the captured creature. A needle flew into the thick plastic. Fault lines spread across the shield with a crackle. They quickly filled with black oil. The soaring bird swooped down and landed on the bookcase, where the other greeted it with a hiss. The pair clicked through the darkness, scratching their way along the wood. The hairs on Lucy's neck prickled as the creatures leaned over the top of the ledge, clicking down at the unconscious possum. The shield was growing heavy. She could feel her muscles burning as she tried to stay rigid, but her arm was beginning to tremble. The bird's clicks grew in intensity as they leaned closer, stooping down to map every contour of her group's position. A high-pitched clang echoed from the aisles beyond Lucy, the sound of metal striking a shelf. The birds, detecting the movement, shot off from their perches towards the source.
"This way, while they're distracted! Follow my voice! Hurry!" called Leckford.
Lucy redoubled her grip on the possum's net and dragged it towards his voice. She felt her way through the darkness, flinching as her fingers touched on algae and discarded webs, praying none of it was toxic.
"They coming back! Freeze!" called Hofstein.
Lucy stopped rigid, her foot hovering above the ground as the clicking birds circled the chamber, searching for the source of the disturbances.
"We're going to turn this flashlight on and throw it across the ground. Then, when they go for it, you people got to run from my voice," said Leckford.
Lucy braced herself. A jet of light shone out from the archway and hurtled across the carpet. The birds swept after it in a flurry of clicks. The flashlight came to a halt against the far bookcase, close to a corner. Its light bounced upwards, bathing the alcove in a warm glow, which was scattered further by the ice-white webbing covering the upper shelves. The bird's needles ricocheted off the tough metal casing, struggling to reach the lens in its nestled position. Lucy and her marksmen sped towards Leckford's voice. She could just make out the others running beside her in the reflected light. One of the birds doubled back, sensing the group's motion. It dived towards Lucy. With a cry, she flung the plastic shield away, sending it shattering against the wall. As she neared the infected soldiers, the ambient light vanished. Lucy gasped as a hand closed around her wrist.
"Hold on to my shoulder and follow me," said Beckley.
Lucy struggled to keep up. Several times his shoulder escaped her grasp, and she lurched forwards, clumsily grabbing him again as he charged through the darkness, using his goggles. Lucy's marksman followed close on her heels, dragging the other half of the possum's net. Suddenly, he fell to the ground, cursing. Lucy froze. She felt a brush of air beside her. Someone was moving through the darkness between them. She felt the pistol disappear from her holster. A strong arm grabbed her in a headlock while another pair of hands wrestled her rifle away.
"Leave it!"
ordered Beckley several yards away as he disarmed Karis in the darkness.
Get away from the door, cried Hofstein as a clicking rang out across the hallway.
Lucy dived forwards blindly. She landed hard on polished wood. Somewhere behind her, a set of doors slammed shut. Someone's marksman cried out beside her. A light flicked on. Lucy couldn't see who was holding it, but it must have been one of the infected soldiers. The light was trained on Karis's marksman. A needle protruded from the top of the man's back, between his shoulder blades. He writhed in panic, wrestling his flak jacket off and flinging it to the side. He sat, panting, reaching over his shoulder and feeling around the patch where the needle had struck. Hofstein's voice sounded from the shadows.
You was lucky. Jacket there done saved your life. But oopsie, looks like it's leaking now. Strange thing for a vest to do. Gets me wondering, what might it be?
He stepped towards the marksman and picked up the dripping jacket. He examined it at arm's length, then tossed it down beside the soldier. Blood seeped out of the vest where it mingled with black poison from the needle.
That your blood? Said Hofstein.
The marksman squinted up at him.
It's from an infected, he stammered. An infected what?
Said Hofstein, stepping closer.
A prisoner? Said the marksman. Someone's blood was spilled to save your life? Let's see how you fare when it's your blood being spilled,
said Hofstein, kicking the marksman in the chest. The man fell backwards with a grunt, cursing the infected. The other marksman twitched, unable to intervene, as Beckley and Leckford kept them at gunpoint.
Goddamn hypocrites, said Lucy, stooping down beside the fallen marksman as Hofstein raised his boot again. What you call me? Said Hofstein. You heard, fumed Lucy. These soldiers are just doing their jobs. If you weren't infected, you'd still be serving, and you'd be wearing these jackets same as them. Don't pretend otherwise. You had no issue reporting your own major when you thought he was the cause of the outbreak, so don't try and claim the moral high ground now that it's you on the receiving end.
Lucy helped the marksman to his feet.
This is different. These assholes know they're betraying their own people. Now they're wearing those crimes like a badge of honor, spat Hofstein.
Listen to me. The creature we've captured, it will change things. I've got a solution to the blood jackets. You have to trust me. But if we lose 3 soldiers on this mission, they won't let us do another, and the chance to change things will be gone. A crackling sound emanated from the chamber behind. An orange glow ebbed through the crack in the door.
Holy crap, did you idiots do that?
Said Lucy's marksman.
Us? Y'all were the ones who fired steel core rounds in a room full of paper, cried Hofstein. This whole place is gonna go up. We need to tell the fire department,
said Karis.
No way they'll send fire trucks to a dead zone, said Leckford.
The crackling beyond the door grew louder as rows of dusty books ignited. Smoke wafted through the cracks.
Beckley, let us go, urged Lucy.
He glared at her.
Any of you try to follow us, we will shoot you. Understood?
Said Beckley. He, Hofstein, and Leckford backed away to the far side of the room. The light disappeared with a click. Cold air rushed in as a fire door was kicked open, only for it to immediately slam shut again. Lucy blinked, trying to adjust to the faint orange glow slipping in from the main chamber.
Which way did they go?
Called Karis through the darkness.
I don't know. Everyone fill the walls for an exit,
cried Lucy's marksman.
The crackling had given way to a roar from the chamber. Lucy coughed as the smoke grew thicker.
This way,
cried Ruth.
Lucy grabbed the net and ran towards the cold, dark air.
Hold it still, insisted Karis. What do you think I'm trying to do?
Grunted Lucy. She jumped back again, narrowly avoiding the creature's barbed tail, while trying to hold the ropes firm. The possum had awoken en route and was fighting the tangled net fiercely. Its purple and blue hair bristled as it hissed through its teeth in warning.
Got it!
Cried Ruth, latching a lasso-tipped pole around the creature's neck. They cut the rest of the net away and secured the possum's other limbs with similar poles. With the rabid creature pinned down and its sharp tail secured, Lucy wheeled the surgical trolley beside it. Karis and Ruth held the creature still, protected by their thick hazmat suits.
Lucy shaved a strip of the possum's fur off its hind leg, revealing sweaty purple skin beneath. She recoiled in disgust.
"You good?" asked Karis.
"Fine," said Lucy, lying. Her hand lingered on her abdomen for a moment as she regained her composure. Lucy sponged the purple skin down to disinfect the site. A meandering vein ran close to the surface. She picked up a large needle and pressed it through the possum's tough skin. The creature jerked in shock. Lucy cursed as the syringe jolted, tearing the perforated skin further apart. Gen water and blood trickled out from the wound. Ruth and Karis pressed harder on the restraints, stretching the possum like it was on a medieval rack. Lucy held the limb firm with one hand and straightened the needle. She could feel the creature quivering with fear. She connected the intravenous drip and stepped back, staring nervously at her patient. A bag of infected human blood hung from the medical stand. It flowed smoothly down into the twitching, shackled creature. They'd exhausted their supply of white powder on the darts, and though the possum had been twice hit in the library, Lucy needed to accelerate the creature's disease as quickly as possible. To her shame, that meant using more blood from Harvey's supplies. Ruth and Karis fastened the restraints to the cell's walls. With the possum secured, the three of them departed the cell. They hosed each other's suits down with chlorine before changing back into their uniforms.
"How long do you think it'll take?" said Karis, fastening her belt.
"We had a small sample from the turtle within 24 hours. This is a different creature, but we've blasted it with one hell of a dose. If all goes well, we should have a stack more powder ready to collect this time tomorrow. Let's rendezvous here tomorrow evening and see what's changed."
"Can't. They're deploying me," said Ruth. "I've been assigned to a new unit and we're on crowd control tomorrow. Apparently, the president's making some public address. It's all to do with the riots. Anyone who says the army has it sweet is full of it. Are you guys coming?"
she added, holding the door open impatiently. Curfew was approaching, and they each had different residences to get back to.
"There's something I need to do. You guys go on," said Lucy.
"Can we help?" said Karis.
"It's best you don't get involved in this one. I'll see you tomorrow."
She waved the pair off into the elevator, then seized a lab coat from the rack by the wall and hurried to the adjacent stairwell. She climbed the zigzagging staircase, taking the steps two at a time until she reached the sixth level. Panting, she peered through the window into the reception area for the infectious diseases department. The doors were closed, and she knew her keycard wouldn't work. If anything, it might alert security that she was trying to gain access. The lift chimed open, and two technicians stepped out, each wheeling a trolley. One of the pair held their pass up to the scanner, which bleeped green. He propped one of the double doors open with his foot so that his colleague could go through. Lucy seized her chance and stepped out from the stairwell as casually as she could.
"Oh, let me get that for you,"
she said cheerfully as she took the weight of the door from the remaining technician. He regarded her with slight bewilderment. Her military uniform was conspicuous against the white lab coat, but the combination seemed to convey enough authority that he decided it not best to question her. Instead, he swung his trolley around gratefully and proceeded into the department. Lucy passed by the receptionist's empty desk and wondered whether Harvey had collected Alexei's body from the basement, as he'd promised. The two technicians peeled off into the first laboratory they reached. Lucy walked past them confidently without a second look back. The lab was immaculate as ever, but much quieter. It was eerie compared to her last visit. She remembered the woman in the hospital gown trying desperately to escape and to get answers for her detention. Lucy wondered what had happened to her. Whether it was her blood she'd just transfused to the possum, or that of the guard who was infected during the woman's attempted escape. A series of porter's trolleys lined the corridor. One held cleaning materials, mops, bleach, rags. The next was a bio-waste disposal cart. Biohazard emblems covered the bold red sides. The cart looked secure by design, such that anything deposited in there couldn't be retrieved without destruction of the entire unit. Lucy peered inside the serrated depository hole. It glistened with specks of gen water. The whole cart smelled strongly of salt and bleach. Inside, rags mixed with a grainy, pungent solution. She moved on to the final trolley, a laundry basket, which contained a bundled pile of damp lab coats and technicians' uniforms. She pressed on, reaching the first expansion ward. Harvey had previously been using it for the infecteds. Since then, the window had been blacked out. She reached out towards the handle, then glanced further down the corridor. She couldn't risk getting embroiled in other people's nightmares again. There was only one place she was trying to go. She hurried onwards, passing more sealed doors. She pretended she hadn't just heard a surgical drill being revved up or someone crying for help. Her heart rate rose as she paced the length of the ward. Lopez's cell was within spitting distance. She stopped suddenly. The door was propped open. Someone was in there. She approached cautiously. A technician was wiping down the surfaces and depositing the sodden rags into another biohazard cart. Lopez's cell was empty, save for a gurney and a bloodied rag on the floor. Lucy's eyes flitted to the ceiling where he'd tried to hang himself. The knot in her stomach twisted. She drifted inside, shaking her head, refusing to believe what she was seeing. The damp outline of his body was stained into the blue sheet of the hospital bed. The restraints hung idly by the sides of the metal rails, the tough fabric frayed but intact. The technician gasped, startled by Lucy's arrival. "Where's the patient?" said Lucy before the technician could question her presence. The woman's face was hard to read behind her mask, but her eyes suggested she was wary of Lucy. Perhaps they'd met. Lucy didn't care. She could feel an anger rising through her. "Where is he?" she demanded, stepping closer towards the woman. The door of the adjacent lab swung open for a brief second, just long enough for Lucy's ears to register an infantile wailing before it clicked shut again.
"Lucy," came a familiar voice from the doorway.
Harvey stood in the threshold, pulling off a pair of gloves.
"In truth, I expected to find you here sooner. I trust the mission went well."
She glared at him, seething with hurt. Harvey either didn't notice or didn't care. He sauntered into the room and continued with his ruminations.
"If I recall, the last time you were here, things got somewhat out of hand. Wouldn't you agree?" he said with an impish grin, as if the whole incident had been a hilarious misunderstanding.
"What have you done to him?" said Lucy, her fists trembling.
"When you left us, I reflected on your behavior a great deal, Lucy. From the outset, I had urged you to separate your emotions from the rational inquiry we'd been tasked with. To my delight, you succeeded in many cases. Your work with Adrian, for instance, came with a heavy emotional burden that not many people could handle. I've always been amazed at how primitive our default responses are to traumatic situations. Yet you overcame them. Indeed, you undertook effective, detailed work, with one exception. Patient Zero. There was something about him that undermined your abilities at every turn, culminating in an impressive display of authoritarian behavior. At first I couldn't fathom it, until I realized you had no care for the other work. It was all just a means to an end. Everything you did was designed to keep you close to him. Grief is a terrible thing," said Harvey.
Lucy's lips parted fractionally as his last words threw her off balance. Harvey noticed this and continued, adopting a nonchalant lean against the lab wall and folding his arms sympathetically.
"Adrian told me about his son. Dan, was it? Losing him must have been terribly hard for you. Had I known the full context, perhaps I would have thought twice about your position in the lab. But your work was competent, and your hypotheses were sound, so who was I to disagree? Of course I should have known."
He folded his latex gloves in on themselves and slipped one hand into his white coat pocket. Lucy glanced from Harvey to the open doorway beside him. Had he figured it out? Did he know she and Lopez had met before DC? Did he know she was infected? She might be able to get past him, but what if the technician intervened? She couldn't fight them both.
"It all makes sense now. You're exposed to a man of not entirely dissimilar age and disposition, with a further commonality through the military, and the grief takes over. You wanted to save Major Lopez, because he represented the partner you had lost.
I see that now, and I realize it was a failure of rational scrutiny on my part for not considering this earlier. I know I have a duty of care over those on my team, and I'm sorry I failed you so dismally in this regard, said Harvey sincerely.
Lucy blinked, astonished. She felt violated by the inquiries Harvey had made into her private life and dismayed by the conclusions he was projecting onto her. Her head spun as thoughts of Dan and Lopez collided. Harvey's simpering look only enraged her further, as he gazed upon her with what appeared to be genuine pity. She shook her head and straightened her back, taking a controlling breath.
"You still haven't answered my question. Where is he?" she said through gritted teeth.
Harvey sighed heavily.
"I'm afraid Patient Zero didn't make it."
Lucy's brain refused to acknowledge the information.
"Didn't make... in what way? How..."
she stammered, searching for an alternative explanation.
"We learned an incredible amount. His bravery throughout the process was noted, as was his descent into mania as the disease took hold," said Harvey solemnly.
"You mean as your experiments broke him," said Lucy.
Anger boiled through her disbelief.
"His sacrifice enabled us to..."
"To what? Torture countless more infected? Was it blood bags? Is that what you used him for? He was a human being."
"He was. Once," said Harvey wistfully.
The doctor drew a bottle from his pocket and rested it conspicuously against his hip. Lucy recognized it as the butterfly bait solution and halted her advance. She hadn't even realized she'd been moving, but now she found herself several paces closer to him, with her knuckles turning white.
"Our job is to save lives. Human lives, Lucy. Take some time to process your feelings. I won't deny you your grief. But when you're ready, come back to us. The city is in trouble, and we need all the help we can get."
A squeaking sound came from Lopez's cell. The technician had let herself in and was wiping down the glass. Lucy's eyes fell on the empty bed once again, and she felt dizzy. She rushed from the room through the corridor and into the elevator. She slid down the silvery wall, overcome by grief and surrender to the world as the elevator descended. Scientists, technicians, doctors, all came and went as she sat, broken, allowing herself to be uselessly ferried between levels, oblivious to the words of the concerned strangers passing through. She had no idea how long had passed, but eventually a familiar face appeared before her. The person knelt down and extended a hand.
"Lucy,"
said Adrian, reaching out to help her. She looked up at him and burst into tears. A hurricane of guilt and grief surged through her. She wept, overwhelmed by her emotions, like a life raft caught in a storm. Adrian gently steered her to a bench in the hospital lobby. For a minute, he held her as she cried. Then he drew away, and the pair sat in subdued silence for a while, their contemplation broken only by the passing of flashing blue lights.
"It will get better,"
said Adrian.
"That's what I keep telling myself, anyway. I heard what you did on the farm. That was brave."
"Something I learned from Dan," said Lucy feebly.
"I'm sorry for how things worked out last time. I should have recognized the pressure you were under. You'd barely arrived in the city, and I put so much on your shoulders. In truth, I was just so relieved to see a friendly face."
Lucy looked down at his feet, where a flip pad rested. It showed an itinerary of hospital zones.
"It's for Harvey's defenses against the butterflies. We're installing them across the most vulnerable zones in the hospital. It's tough, prioritizing. People don't like hearing they're on the wait list," he said glumly.
He fidgeted, adjusting a flak jacket beneath his trench coat. Lucy looked closer. It bore the two horizontal yellow lines of a blood jacket.
"You're okay wearing that?" said Lucy.
"I'm fine with staying alive, if that's what you mean."
"It's not."
"These things could be a game changer for us.
In the past week, we've lost swaths of the city to the creatures, and our intelligence is expecting... Well, it's not looking good. Put it that way. But with these jackets, we stand a chance. We could even take the whole city back.
Why not just ask the infected people to help? Said Lucy.
I don't follow.
Right now, you're forcibly taking their blood and inflicting psychological torture. It's crazy. You shouldn't be detaining infected. You should be training them as soldiers.
One thing the White House is not keen on doing is arming a bunch of hallucinating, highly contagious citizens. Besides, even if they did psychologically stabilize, which is a big if, training takes time. We need solutions now.
I'm afraid the government's going in the opposite direction. They're scaling up production.
Production?
It's a necessary measure. If we don't do something to reduce frontline fatalities, the army will mutiny. If that happens, we're screwed.
Who's we? Said Lucy.
Adrian looked puzzled.
I can pull some strings and get you one of the prototypes, if you want.
I'll pass.
It's the smart move, Lucy. You should take it. If you're worried about the infected, Harvey assures me they're being well cared for.
Don't. Please, if you know it's not true, don't say it.
I could use you back on the team, if you're ready. There are more vulnerable sites we need to secure, and I can't assess them all myself.
I'm already working on something. There's a better way than these blood bags, and in 3 days' time, I'll have more than enough proof to get this whole program canceled, said Lucy, staring at the floor distantly.
Last shuttle going north, folks. Last shuttle, called a security guard from the front desk.
Lucy looked through the glass facade of the hospital lobby. It was nearly dark outside. A bus was idling on the sidewalk. Several stragglers were hastening towards it.
Crap. You getting that? Said Lucy.
I'm working late. You go ahead.
Be careful.
The city's not what it was when you left.
She grabbed him in a tight embrace, then tore herself away and hurried through to the street. A nurse stood before her in the line, pleading with the driver.
We're not going to that part, ma'am. It's dead zone now. Y'all have been rehoused in the next neighborhood,
said the driver, waving the woman through.
But my family,
said the nurse, stammering, processing the implications of his words.
They'll be relocated too, ma'am, I'm sure. Please move down the vehicle. Night's coming and I don't want to be out if I don't have to.
The woman protested, unable to comprehend how her disjointed life had been relocated again in one fell swoop. A colleague tried to soothe her while leading her into the carriage area, allowing Lucy and others to board. Lucy weaved past the full rows until she found a spare seat near the back. The bus rumbled through the shadowy streets. Other late-running residents were rushing to metro stations and bus stops. Patrols were stationed at regular intersections, although the troops were staying firmly inside their trucks. Chanting mingled with the sound of the engine. The bus slowed to a crawl as protesters surrounded the vehicle.
Equal rights for all!
Cried the group as they banged their palms against the bus. The protesters all wore white armbands. Lucy looked around. Half of her fellow passengers were startled. The others seemed unsurprised.
You people are crazy! Move out of the way! It's getting dark! You want to die?
Yelled the bus driver, thumping the horn. The crowd parted to allow the bus to edge forward to the bus stop. They banged their palms on the sides, filling it with an intimidating din. The bus came to a stop, and the doors slid open. The crowd's angry chants filled the air. Over their voices came whistle blasts as soldiers reluctantly left their armored vehicles to force the protesters back. Regular citizens squeezed their way through the chanting crowd and leapt onto the bus with relief. They wormed their way as far inside as they could, seeking shelter among the existing passengers. More whistle blasts rang out as soldiers shoved the protesters clear of the bus, allowing the last passengers to board before the driver hastily pulled away.
Thank God for that. Some people, honestly, sighed a passenger as the protesters' chants faded behind them.
The voice was familiar. Lucy glanced down the bus to the middle set of doors, and her heart froze. There he was, in plain sight, the unmistakable half-shaven head and slicked back hair, the insidious smile, the nonchalant tone. Lucy's mind raced. There had to be a mistake. He couldn't be here, in the city. They'd escaped. It wasn't fair. It wasn't supposed to go like this. She had no idea how Maurice had made it to D.C., but he knew her secret. Worse still, he'd betrayed her once before. Trusting him was a mistake she could never forget. She'd forced Lopez and Jackson to risk their lives rescuing him in the snow from the beasts. Jackson gave her life to save Maurice from the birds, yet even as she had lain dying in the frozen trailer park, he had plotted against them, siding with a bunch of deserters to sell Lucy and Lopez into slavery. He'd watched on as his queen had blackmailed Lucy into atrocious acts. The hospital raid, the blood assault on the police community. How many families had died that night? It was his fault. All of it. And somehow he was here, now, on her bus, armed with the words that could get her arrested in seconds and destroy her chances of saving the other infecteds. The scale of the threat he represented crashed over Lucy. Fear gripped her insides like a vice. He hadn't seen her yet. She had only moments to act, as surreptitiously as she could. Lucy drew the knife strapped to her ankle and tucked it up her sleeve. She quietly offered her seat to a nearby passenger and took his place standing up. Keeping her eyes fixed on the Canadian, she edged forwards, working her way between the tightly packed clusters of other passengers. Lucy froze and dipped her head down, shielding herself behind a couple in front as Maurice casually glanced backwards. She studied his reflection in the windows and pressed forwards once again. She was just three people away from him now. Lopez's torture, the Queen's depravity, Adrian's disappointment in Lucy, Dan's death. Good people were dead, and Maurice, the snake, was alive. It couldn't be allowed to stand. Her pulse raced as she prepared to do what needed to be done. He couldn't be allowed to speak. He couldn't be given the chance to betray her again. He had to be silenced. Moreover, he had to pay for everything he'd put her through. The jugular vein offered the greatest chance of success. But people would see the knife as she raised it. Someone might grab her arm, or the bus could jolt and she might slash a bystander. She'd have to go under his ribs. If she stabbed him from behind, she could thrust the blade upwards. She could hit a kidney and tear the intestines, maybe even cut through to some of the central organs. If she twisted it, it would be fatal. She'd have to be quick. Wrap one hand around his mouth and pull him back into the knife, hold him close, then cast his body out at the next stop. If anyone questioned her afterwards, she could say she saw him about to attack another passenger and intervened as an off-duty conscript. They'd have to evacuate the bus after on account of the blood, but that was a secondary concern. Lucy's mind raced through the plan as she edged towards him, carefully lowering the knife from her sleeve. She was just two people away. The bus stopped abruptly, and the door swung apart. Marie stepped off as two new passengers climbed in. With a surge of panic, Lucy darted forwards, drawing the knife, but the bus lurched forwards, knocking her against the doorway as it tried to close. The knife fell to the sidewalk with a clatter. Marie turned curiously, then realized what it was. He recoiled in horror and stared at the bus, locking eyes with Lucy as the vehicle pulled away. The doors hissed shut and Lucy slumped against the rail as Maurice's disbelieving eyes vanished into the shadows. Her head spun as the bus rolled onwards. People shoved past her in both directions as the vehicle stopped and started. She vaguely registered the group of white armband wearers clamber aboard. One of them spat at her boots and the others muttered derisively about soldiers. Lucy's eyes eventually registered a familiar-looking hedgerow outside and her brain woke up. She jumped off the bus just as the doors hissed shut and drifted to her halls of residence. She walked past the canteen dazedly, her head spinning. People were lining up to get their evening rations. Many wore white armbands. Acidic burn marks remained etched into the tables and walls from the attack over a week ago. Lucy slipped past the entrance and climbed the staircase to her level. Her first priority was getting out of the uniform. She had to change her appearance quickly. Maurice could have reported her by now, and if a detective came knocking, the white armbands in the canteen would do her no favors, dressed as she was. She opened her door and flicked the main light switch. It didn't work, but the cheap white desk lamp did. Lucy pulled off her fatigues and threw them on the floor in a heap. She stared at herself in the mirror. Dark bags hung under her eyes. Her short, choppy hair was matted. Her ribs showed through her thin frame. Faint, pale scars dotted her skin from the lesions she'd endured. A patch of crusty, dry skin remained over her abdomen, where the liquid flesh had healed at a cost to her overall body weight. She barely recognized herself. She raided the cupboard for clothes and pulled out something soft that belonged to the college student that used to occupy the room. The sweater was comforting. She sat on her bed and ran her hands up and down the outsides of her arms, closing her eyes and focusing on the soft, soothing fabric. She missed Dan's touch. His embrace. His love. She missed Cassie, too. Her best friend's laughter echoed in her mind. Her stories, her friendship, her encyclopedic knowledge of San Francisco's bars. Lucy yearned for the life she'd lost. Lopez moved to the front of her mind as she replayed their fleeting reunion in the city. His smile. His unexpected humor. She missed his protection and his understanding, and she hated herself for it. Tears slid out from beneath her closed eyes, landing on her lap with a soft pitter-patter as she clutched her sides and wept. The door handle creaked. Lucy's eyes snapped open as Fliss entered their small shared room. The teenager gasped with delight, bounded over to Lucy, and wrapped her in a fierce hug.
I had no idea when you were coming back. Jack said you were being deployed or something. I was so worried, said Fliss.
Lucy pulled herself away from the embrace and shook her head.
Pack your stuff. You've got to get out of the city, both of you, said Lucy, dragging the hem of her sleeve across her cheeks. It's not safe here anymore. You have no idea what they're doing to people like us.
But how would they even know about us? We're not showing any symptoms.
What if that changes? We barely know how this disease works. We don't even have a name for it. All I know is that they're rounding our type up. We need to get out while we can.
You want us to run?
Absolutely.
If we run, we can't fight back.
Fight? We can't fight the government. They have an army. Our only chance is to get out before we're discovered.
Fliss shook her head.
We need to lay low for a bit, that's all. This government's going to fall. When it does, we'll be ready.
Who's we? Said Lucy, baffled.
Follow me, said Fliss, with a glint in her eye.
Lucy recognized the abandoned law office. It was where Jack had suggested they hide recovering infecteds. Her mind flashed back to the night they'd dragged the hallucinating Eastern European man there for his own protection. She remembered the multiple people she'd been investigating for the health department before she was dispatched to the farm. She wondered how many of them had made it here, to the address she'd given them. The windows had been blacked out, and algae had spread across the facade of the building. Fliss delivered a coded knock. The side door swung open, revealing a pitch-black room beyond.
Come on,
whispered Fliss, stepping inside. Lucy let the door shut behind them as instructed, sealing them in darkness. A brief moment passed before a second door opened, revealing a lit corridor beyond.
This place has power now,
said Lucy as she followed the teenager through the disused law office.
It's got a lot of things,
said Fliss, proudly showing Lucy into the open-plan basement space.
Ta-da!
The archive room had been transformed since Lucy's first visit. The deep, sturdy shelves had been cleared of their boxes of case files and turned into makeshift hospital beds. Lucy's face fell as she took in the rows of quivering, murmuring, infected people strapped to the bunks. The space stank of accumulated bodily fluids. Two nurses patrolled the ward, changing bedpans, mopping fevered brows, tightening restraints, and administering water to parched lips. Lucy's hand twitched, moving instinctively to her scarred abdomen. She shuddered to think what was in store for the rows of delirious, convulsing patients before her. There must have been at least 80 of them packed into the room.
You don't like it?
Said Fliss, crestfallen, as she read Lucy's face.
The disease is still spreading, said Lucy, dispirited.
Fliss took Lucy by the hand and led her through the corridor into a larger, parallel room.
It gets better,
she said firmly, stepping back to allow Lucy to survey the space. The room was filled with improvised beds and office chairs, but there were no restraints. The patients were sleeping peacefully or reading in the comfort of lamplight. Nurses were collecting bowls from bedsides where some sort of stew had been served with bread. Lucy didn't recognize any of the 100-plus faces, but those that registered her presence looked up warmly. Many gave Fliss a fond wave. A radio played from the corner of the room, pricking Lucy's attention. She hadn't heard a broadcast since San Francisco.
You're listening to The People's Voice. Coming up next, we've got an exclusive interview with Rhea, who will be sharing the last from her attempts to bring the government to the negotiating table. Our reporters were on the ground today gathering your questions, and we'll be putting them to her shortly following a record turnout in support for the movement. If you can't join tomorrow's march, remember to wear your white armband to work. Let the government know you're here and that you have a voice. The people's voice. We'll be right back.
The commentator gave way to a Motown classic as Fliss led Lucy through the space.
There's more through here,
she said, ushering Lucy into the back of a conference room. 40 people sat in rows staring at a projected map of the city. On it, several buildings were circled in red, orange, or blue. Lucy's mouth hung open as she recognized the man delivering the briefing. Kriz, the first person they'd brought here, was alive and well. He tapped the board and reiterated a warning about increased government patrols. With a chorus of chair scraping, the back two rows were dismissed. Half of the assembled adults rose to their feet and filed out of the room as the projection changed to a new slide entitled Ammo, with a map highlighting the government's key arsenals. Fliss and Lucy stepped out into the corridor to make room for the exiting members. A cry pricked Lucy's ears. She marched towards it.
Not that one!
Urged Fliss, but it was too late. Lucy stared around the darkened room. She could just make out a dozen outlines on the floor. She flicked on the light, revealing the row of lesion-covered bodies. A look of agony was fixed to their stone-cold faces.
Not everyone makes it, said Fliss sadly.
Crying resonated again from down the hall. Lucy left the makeshift morgue and passed towards the source.
Lucy, wait! There's something I need to tell you, called Fliss.
Lucy plunged into the room ahead. The sound of a crying infant greeted her. The lighting was dim. Rows of archive boxes had been rearranged to create a worktop lining the sides of the room. The uppermost boxes sat at waist height, and their tops were open. Two floor-to-ceiling shelves protruded from either side of the room and met into the middle, creating an archway through which the cribs seemed to continue on the other side. Lucy peered into the first box, and nausea swept over her. In it slept a tiny humanoid infant. Its puffy eyes were sealed tightly shut, and its slightly too large head was tilted to the side. Its skin was pinkish purple. As it slept, it let out faint snores. It frowned from its slumber as the breeze from the corridor wafted in. Lucy stepped further inside, followed anxiously by Fliss, who let the door close quietly behind them. Lucy stared into each crib as she moved, barely believing the sights greeting her as purple-tinged infants slept in lidless, crudely padded storage boxes. An infant's cry rang out once again from the far end of the room. Lucy peered around the partition. An infant's head protruded above the shoulder of a nurse as he rocked it back to sleep. The nurse's skin was blemished and mottled. The lesions he'd suffered were no longer swollen or raw, but they'd left stains across his skin like a map of birthmarks, infusing his bronze skin with purple. The nurse lowered the sleeping infant back into its crib and pulled a blanket over its tiny body, delicately tucking it under the child's legs. He gazed at the infant for a moment before another child began to cry. With a weary sigh, the nurse limped towards an adjacent crib, picking up a bottle of beige liquid as he moved. The bleaching pattern ran across his face and into his eyes, one of which was tinged with purple. The fingers on his left hand were curled as if damaged by a stroke, and one shoulder was dropped lower than the other. With a gasp, he caught sight of Lucy. His lips cracked into a wonky half-smile. Lucy let out a single disbelieving word.
Lopez?
Young,
he replied, his smile widening. She shook her head and backed away, aghast. She fled into the corridor, clutching her hair, and slid to the ground, murmuring in denial. Fliss caught up quickly and placed a consoling arm around her.
They told me he was dead, sobbed Lucy.
Who told you?
Said Fliss, appalled.
Harvey,
said Lucy, clinging to the ground for stability. She couldn't believe she'd let him dupe her. Her mind did somersaults as she processed what was happening.
I'm so sorry. I thought you knew. I was so pleased to see you, I didn't think to ask. Oh, gosh, and he looks so different. You must be thinking,
I don't care about that. I just need a minute, said Lucy.
She composed herself, then approached the nursery. She placed a hand on the door and gently creaked it open. Lopez looked at her with earnestness and shame. A tear formed in the corner of his eye. Lucy placed a hand against his tainted cheek and stroked it once, then placed her arms around his shoulders and held him. Guilt clawed at Lucy. She'd nearly killed Lopez in the lab, yet here he was, glad to be alive and free, albeit in hiding. She looked from him to Fliss in admiration as they recounted the audacious rescue mission they'd pulled off, smuggling Lopez out of Harvey's lab.
You remember Chris? Polish dude, first guy we ever brought down here? Said Fliss.
You had him tied to a wheelchair in a basement. How could I forget? He was giving the briefing earlier, right? Said Lucy.
Yes. Chris was the first to heal, and it turns out he's ex-Special Forces. He was deployed with NATO and everything. When Jack got back here and told him about Major Lopez, he volunteered right away, said Fliss proudly.
A baby gurgled from the box nearest Lucy, then fell asleep. It was so small, so delicate. Human in every way, save only for the complexion. Lucy's hand moved to her womb as she cast her eyes across the cribs. The purple tinge was more pronounced in some than others. She felt disgusted looking at them.
Beautiful, aren't they?
Said Lopez, fussing over one infant's swaddling. His left hand was clumsy and imprecise. His curled fingers meant he could only use the hand as a lump to press the cloth down in place, while his right hand manipulated the fabric more nimbly.
Which one's yours?
Said Lucy, peering down at the row of makeshift cribs.
Mine's still in the hospital,
said Lopez, faltering. Fliss placed a comforting arm on Lopez's sunken shoulder. Lucy felt a pang of jealousy, which must have slipped across her face. She caught Fliss's eye, and the teenager let go bashfully.
These children are orphans, mostly. This one's mother was killed by the army 2 days ago during a food raid.
She raked her fingertips through the handful of thin, strawberry blonde hairs growing across its scalp.
Whose food were you raiding? Said Lucy. The government's. They've got warehouses that supply all of the residences in the city. Security's tight, though, so it was a high risk. Luckily, we were able to deploy some soldiers from our own ranks. They got a long way before the guards figured out they were deserters.
Wait, these soldiers. Do you mean Hofstein and the others?
You know them?
They betrayed you. They're the whole reason you were arrested in the first place, said Lucy.
Not the whole reason,
said Lopez with a twitch of his eyebrow. Lucy blushed, catching his drift. It was on her advice that he'd eaten the white powder back at Camp Oscar. Of course, that was before they'd known about the disease. The last time they'd clashed over this, it had ended up with them rolling across an icy street in Boston trying to kill each other.
I'm over it, added Lopez, reading her mind. Just like I'm over those guys reporting me. They were only doing their duty. I don't begrudge them. They're good soldiers.
Even after everything that happened to you?
That's on Harvey. His time will come soon enough.
Lopez paused, resting his hand at the lip of the child's crib. He bore an expression Lucy had never seen on his hardened, stoic features before, even throughout the anguish he'd experienced in Harvey's hands. This was something altogether new. He looked mournful.
I miss him so much,
said Lopez, staring at the crib.
Who?
My son.
The one who died from the spores?
I miss them all. My son, my daughter, and this new child,
said Lopez, breaking off, pained by the thought. Lucy looked to Fliss in bewilderment, but Fliss was nodding at Lopez sympathetically.
You miss the alien kid?
said Lucy, not knowing how else to put it.
I know it seems insane, but it's like they're back. My children, both of them, in this new soul. I felt a connection that I've not felt since I lost the older two, said Lopez with tears in his eyes.
But it's not them, it's not anything, it's a disease, said Lucy, perplexed. Lopez shook his head. Tears dripped into the crib below as he squeezed his eyes, trying to compose himself.
I had accepted my children's deaths. I've worked hard every day to keep looking forwards, to make them proud. Then out of nowhere, this miracle happened, and it's like they were back in my arms. I know how crazy that sounds. I'm just telling you how it feels. Right now, knowing my child's trapped somewhere in Harvey's lab, probably enduring the same torture I did at the hands of that psychopath, it's unbearable. I have to get him back. I have to get my child, said Lopez, his voice cracking as he spoke. You've never had kids, Lucy. I wouldn't expect you to understand what it feels like to lose them, but I promise you, whatever you saw me experience in that cell, this is worse.
Lucy stared at him, open-mouthed.
He was insane. It had to be some feature of the disease, a pathological attachment to the offspring which spawned out of the host's flesh without consultation or warning. She could see the malaise affecting every part of his vision.
Lucy's baby died, said Fliss,
interrupting her moment of reflection. The words pierced Lucy like a spear. Her baby? That thing was not her baby. She'd never had a baby. She and Dan had been trying, but it was taking time. Her hopes of becoming a mother had died with Dan. What was Fliss doing, blurting out a thing like that?
You had a baby?
Said Lopez, staring at Lucy, his eyes wide with sorrow for her.
It wasn't a baby. It happened in Boston. It was a miscarriage of sorts, caused by the disease. The progeny wasn't viable. It was stillborn. In that sense, I guess I was lucky. I'm not sure what I would have done otherwise.
Lucy, I'm so sorry.
Sorry? For what? That we've all got the same disease and seem to be involuntarily hatching tiny offspring from our bodies? Don't pity me, Ed. I got off lightly. My tumor kid was dead already. Bullet dodged.
She clenched her fist, remembering the sticky, gelatinous feel of her own flesh as she'd scooped the fetus from the appendage that had grown over her abdominal wall.
How can you speak like that?
Said Lopez, aghast.
I'm just stating the facts, said Lucy bluntly.
These are children, Lucy. Children of people, said Lopez, gesturing to the cribs around them.
They're the progeny of a disease that's hijacked our species, Ed. Can't you see? Everything you're feeling is the disease manipulating you. Think about it. It's found another way to reproduce, and it's playing on your paternal instincts to ensure it has the best chance of survival in its new form. The progeny probably release a hormone or something that triggers this response in you.
Please stop calling them that.
Ed, you're not thinking clearly. Be objective.
This is the clearest I've thought in 8 months,
snapped Lopez, raising his voice. The babies around them stirred at the noise. A ripple of crying passed around the room.
Can you two take this outside?
Said Fliss, scooping up two of the crying infants and trying to soothe them back to sleep. Lucy left the room without another word and paced the corridor. She slammed her palm against the wall in frustration, then slumped to the ground. She sat there for several minutes, cooling off as the enormity of the conversation sank in. After a moment, Lopez joined her, closing the door behind him delicately.
I know it's hard to understand, mainly because I can't explain it, but it feels like I've got my kids back. Yes, maybe it's some side effect of the disease, maybe my brain's being manipulated, but that doesn't change how it's making me feel. It's like I've been torn in two, like half of me is still in that laboratory, having God knows what done to it. I have to give my baby back, please. Lucy.
She stared at the floor, struggling to believe how she could have gone from being so relieved he was alive to so fearful of his mindset.
I understand, she said vacantly. Will you help me?
You don't need my help. You can use Kriz, can't you?
Kriz only got me out because he knew where to look.
Fliss and Jack knew enough about your work to give him my rough location in the hospital.
We have no idea where the babies are being held.
You think I know? Said Lissy with a single cold laugh.
I need you to find out. Use your access.
Do you have any idea what thin ice I'm on? I'm amazed they've even let me back into the lab after how things panned out last time. The only reason they've reinstated my clearance is because I've given them something new. I have to tread carefully. I can't risk being thrown out again.
What have you given them?
Said Lopez, concerned. Lucy hesitated. She knew he wasn't going to like it. The white powder. I've shown them how to cultivate it.
You did what? The very substance that infected all of us? You're showing them how to make more? Do they even know what it is?
They know it's lethal to D4 creatures and toxic to humans.
But you've not told them it causes the very disease they're trying to contain? How could you be so reckless?
I'm doing it to save people like us, okay?
What do you mean?
Harvey's realized that D4 creatures generally avoid infecteds. He's harvesting blood from infected people to use in body armor for soldiers.
So the rumors are true.
It's worse than that. The blood is only effective for a matter of days, then it has to be replenished. That's why I had to show them the powder.
And risk infecting the entire city?
What the hell else was I supposed to do? The pair sat for a moment in silence, each fuming with frustration and upset. I can't jeopardize my current mission. Until we can force the government to decommission their blood strategy, all infecteds are at stake. The powder has to come first, Ed, but I will try to find your child. I promise. With a sniff, he placed his arms around her in gratitude and held her tightly. For a moment, she didn't reciprocate. She felt his body warm hers as her head swam. What lay ahead was risky. Harvey was capable of anything, and she didn't want to go through what Lopez had endured. She placed her arm over his and locked hands with him. The door clicked open and Fliss stepped into the corridor. She gave them an awkward smile.
They're all back to sleep for now. We're out of formula, though. I'll ask the kitchen to make some up. I think they said they had fresh leaves.
She turned to leave, but Lucy called her back. Fliss, wait up. I need your help. You too, Ed, said Lucy, rising to her feet.
What is it?
Lucy turned her gaze to Lopez and fixed him with a solemn stare. Maurice is in D.C.
The Canadian? How? Are you sure?
He was on my bus. I tried to kill him, but it didn't work out. It felt strange hearing the words come from her mouth, like it was a perfectly normal thing to do. Like a fact of life.
Who is this Maurice guy?
Said Fliss.
He's a treacherous piece of shit is what he is,
snarled Lopez, the first flickers of his old self rekindled with the news.
Does he know you're infected?
Said Fliss. It's the whole reason he sold us out, said Lucy. If there's the slightest way he can use it to his advantage, he'll do it again right away. He knows my name and can give a good description. If he reports me, the health department will investigate anyone I've been in contact with. They'll find out about you and Jack. It would only be a matter of time before they discovered this place. For as long as that man lives, this building and everyone in it is under threat.
I promised him if I ever saw him again, I'd kill him. Fliss and Kriz will track him down and bring him here. Then I'll do what I should have done the first time he crawled into our lives.